Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's LYNDA.com/know-how. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code know-how. On this episode of Know-How, Project Aura, we take your feedback, a little demo of Heartbleed, and Windows 8 tips. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballaser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
For the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to take you through some projects, show you some of the stuff we've been geeking out to, and this is one of those special feedback episodes.
So we get to talk to the people that have been communicating with us on Google Plus.
Yeah, because we love you. We love you, and you know, we take a lot of our show from what you ask us for, so we thought this might be a good time to kick some of that off. But before we do that, Have you heard about this Project Aura?
Ooh, is that the modular cell phone?
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of dismissed this at first because I get flashbacks to my childhood where we had laptops that were quote-unquote modular, and it was so awesome. It would be the last thing you buy ever because you could replace the screen. In fact, there was this one from a company in Fremont where I used to live, from Everex, and they had, you know, they were CPU modules and a monitor module and a battery module and a hard drive module.
Put it all together yourself.
I know. It was like the Transformer of laptops. And I honestly thought this is the last thing you will ever buy. It was crazy expensive.
Well, like, yeah, because it's modular.
Yeah, so it was like $6,000. And back then, that'd be like $24,000.
But that's all you'll ever have to buy because, you know, you'll be putting it together. It's like Legos. Once you buy a big pile of Legos, you can put together however you want.
Who doesn't like Legos? But there's always one big problem with all the modular projects, and that is if you're good at everything, you're not great at anything.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. So it would be fast, but the battery life would be horrible. Maybe you could get a better screen, but then, you know, not all the programs looked right. And it was, you know, the modular thing, even though it was a cool promise, nothing ever quite fit together right.
Yeah.
You really did look like you had a bunch of stuff.
Just kind of hodgepodge together.
Yeah, hodgepodge, not a good look.
Yeah, you know, and even upgradable laptops. A friend of mine bought a laptop with the idea that, oh, you know, don't worry, I'm going to upgrade the video card in this in a couple of years, and it'll be fine.
And you never
They didn't keep it up to date. They didn't keep making hardware for it. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's always been one of the problems, which is if you lock in the modularity of your device, it means you kind of have to constrain using new devices. Otherwise, you kind of lose everyone that came before you. Or you have to say, well, everything you bought before, you should get rid of that because we've got the new hotness.
Right. But this project, so this is cell phone specific, and this is the idea of being able to switch out hardware for your cell phone to, like, add a bigger battery, change the camera, you know, build it to the way you want. But it uses, like, magnets to hold things in and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So Project Aura is part of Google's, it's kind of their skunkworks, right? Mm. The project actually came out of one of their DARPA competitions. What they created was an endoskeleton. Everything is built on this. And I think Alex has some. So yeah, exactly. That's what it looks like.
It looks cool.
It does look cool, and it looks like an interesting smartphone. But all those little rectangles, those are actually modules that are magnetically held to the structure, to the skeleton. Now, this endoskeleton doesn't just use, like, a magnetic lock. Mm-hmm. They call it electro-permanent magnets, which means you can turn them off, which makes it easy to remove the modules.
Okay.
Now, the thing about this, and the reason why they say this is different than any other modular project that you've seen before, is that the endoskeleton allows the other modules to see what is attached to that endoskeleton and then interact with one another.
Okay.
This means you can have a common platform that uses different screens, different processors, different communication modules.
That's just the shell.
That's just the shell.
You attach things to.
Right.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it is we've come to a point where most phones are just kind of riffs off of each other, right?
Oh, yeah.
A different size screen, maybe a bit more memory. This lets you choose exactly what you want in your phone and then upgrade the things that you no longer like.
As you go along, I guess. Like, yeah. Maybe you decide you want a better camera down the line or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the slim form factors allows the modules to be attached easily. And I think the real revolutionary concept here isn't the technology. It's that Google isn't trying to make money off this phone. We know this. This is Google's MO. They don't want to make money off the hardware. They just want
to showcase something.
Yeah, it's showcase an ecosystem that encourages third parties to come in and build modules. Now, the big problem with those modular laptops is one company wanted to make all the money off of it, which meant ultimately...
And it was closed.
Yeah, it was closed and doomed. Closed dies. We know that. Closed will eventually die. This, since there's a standard that they've given to everyone and said, as long as you adhere to this standard, you'll be able to talk to every other module, could foreseeably mean that the same endoskeleton that allows you to build your $1,000 luxury mobile device also allows you to build the sub-$100 super inexpensive device.
I really like that idea, but I also kind of want to, not get too excited about it, because obviously the way things work now with cell phones is they kind of die off after a couple of years, like the new one comes out. Mm-hmm. Like, so when you have this modular design, is it going to be like, well, I'm going to have to shed these other mods to make my phone up to date, and then what do I do with, like, the old pieces? Like, do I put together another phone and then give it to my kid or something?
And that was my first thought. When I saw this project, I'm like, oh, this is just another bunch of stuff that's going to be sitting in a box.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, but am I actually going to use it?
Am I going to be swapping stuff out all the time, or am I just going to have one configuration that I never touch again?
But here's where I think it could be useful. Imagine you have that one endoskeleton, and you have the screen that you like.
Yeah.
But then you change the modules depending on what you're going to do with it. And your daily driver, you want a certain amount of memory, and you want a certain amount of capabilities, and you definitely want the wireless connection module. But let's say now you need something that's going to last a long time.
Right.
So you strip it all down, and you put in the module that'll allow it to last for 5 days.
Give it the big battery
The super huge battery and the slower processor. I could actually see that. Customize your device for what you're going to do that day, rather than what a lot of people do is they have multiple devices. So I'm taking this one and this one, or I'd leave that one at home.
Yeah.
I could see a future.
I don't think I could see Samsung making pieces for it, because they have their phones that they want to sell.
Yeah.
And, Lenovo just bought Motorola, so it's like, who's going to get into this game to build the modules and stuff? But that is cool. I like that idea. And one of the things that if it does open up for like a lot of people and third parties get into it, I saw it was a mock-up of a game controller that just attaches to it also. So it's like clamshell folded. So it's like you could turn your phone into something better than just, the phone. You could turn it into like a game thing with the pad and everything. Yeah. Instead of having to buy, I have those MOGA controllers for my phone. Those are okay, but I don't want to carry like the MOGA controller with me everywhere. But if it was an attachment for the phone that just folded together and I could still slide it in my pocket, that'd be cool.
Now, we're tech people, so we tend to be a bit cynical, and so we're seeing all the downsides. But I got to say, as the optimist in me is saying...
Yes, I want to believe.
I want to believe. This could be kind of cool.
I want it to be like Field of Dreams. Like, if Google builds it, they will come.
Now, people in the chat room are pointing out, like, Gardner saying, oh, but Samsung will make a different version with slightly different... yeah, that could happen. But here's... And this is why I think this approach is genius, what Google is doing. If they really open it up to all parties and Samsung starts making their proprietary modules, but LG is making modules that fit every phone, someone's going to win out.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to be the person who makes devices that only fit their models.
Well, I guess you'll find out how long that walled garden's going to work out for you,
I dig under the walled garden.
Get under that,
I'm not going over this, no more climbing.
Well, that's pretty cool. I do like that idea, and I'm hopeful for it.
I'm hopeful, and you know what? It's learning stuff. I like learning stuff.
Yeah, because then you know more about your phone, yeah. And you can build it to your likes or dislikes. Because I know certain people buy phones that don't have cameras because they can't take it to like certain projects with a camera on it. Or maybe you want to give a phone to your kid and build it yourself and have them build it and make sure it doesn't have a camera or something like that. So that's cool.
But you know, anything that adds to the wealth of knowledge in the world is a good
We're
thing.
We're cool with that.
We're cool with that.
Especially when it has a cool name with the electromagnetic.
Electro-permo-magnet.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Now, you know what doesn't have electro-permanent magnets but is really big into learning?
Padre? Is that you?
It's no.
Oh.
I was thinking Linda.
Oh, right. Yeah,
Linda. You know about them, right? Yeah, they're the online learning company. They're the guys who make it easy for you to find out anything about anything.
That's right. Yeah, that's where I go to brush up on stuff that I've forgotten.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this, Brian. What do you want to learn this year?
Ooh, I want to learn how to code.
Software skills, right?
Yeah, software skills.
Well, how about this? What if I give you a place that you could learn how to code, that you could learn business skills, that you could learn trade skills, that you could learn anything that maybe you had forgotten or things that you always wanted to pick up, and you could do it all from the comfort of your own home.
And on certain mobile devices, too?
Mobile devices, laptops, desktops, pretty much anywhere you want to learn, any way you want to learn, any time you want to learn. What if I were to say there were a company out there that said, hey, yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah, and is it all curated and nicely filmed and stuff?
Yeah, and with good lights, with good audio, with good sound, with good studios.
Cool.
Yeah,
tell me about it.
Too bad that doesn't exist, right?
It has to.
It has to. Actually, it does exist, and it's called lynda.com. Now, Linda just released a course on Arduino this week, so you can start programming interactive objects with Arduino Uno, the open-source single-board microcontroller. You can also learn how to set up your GoPro Hero to start capturing skills, videos, or even time-lapse photography. It's something that we've done here on Know How, and we love that Linda has picked up. You could also learn how to get great sports footage. It's not as easy as just pointing the camera in the right direction. You need to have the skills to capture the shots that you want. There's also a course on Blackmagic cameras where you can get to know the features of the popular cinema and production 4K cameras, which, if you didn't keep up with some of our footage from NAB and other events, is really the only 4K high-definition streaming cameras that you can find at an affordable rate. And you can decide if Blackmagic cameras are right for you. It's one of the things that Linda lets you do. Oh, if you're interested in 3D printing, Linda also lets you learn the basic of what 3D printing is and how you can use it to create objects from prototypes to working tools. Now, I have been using Linda recently for Python. We're using it as a module for coding 101. And I like it because it fills in the gaps. It allows me to remember the stuff that I had done previously and to, well, recall the stuff that I loved so much about that programming language. I think that's one of the key elements of Linda, which is it's not just for people who want to learn new things. It's for those people who think they may need to brush up on some of the skills that they've let lapse. Linda is great for all those types of people. Now, Linda has over 2,400 courses with more added weekly. All lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality, not, you know, the homemade YouTube videos. There's nothing wrong with those.
No.
But sometimes you want really good audio. Sometimes you want really good lighting. Sometimes you want clear and crisp video and people who actually understand how to present. And lynda.com works with software companies to provide you updated training the same day that new versions hit the markets. You'll always have the latest skills. At lynda.com, those instructors are accomplished professionals, not just in classroom teachers, but people who have actually worked in the field that they're teaching about. They have courses for all experience levels, from beginner, intermediate, and advanced, and you can watch from your computer, your tablet, or your mobile device. Whether you have 15 minutes or 15 hours, each course is structured so that you can learn from start to finish. You can also search the transcripts to find quick answers or read along with the video. Lynda.com also offers certificates of completion when you finish a course, which means you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great if you're a professional in the field and you want to show people what you've studied. So here's what we want you to do. If you want to learn, if you want to know how to do things, learn something new with Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library, or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,400 courses free for 7 days. It's all at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Linda for their support of Know How. All right, let's get into some other learning.
Ooh. Feedback.
Feedback time from Google Plus.
Yeah, you know, it's our community, right? We've got that community at gplus.to/knowhow.
Right.
And we want people to participate. And one of the ways that we encourage you to participate is you send us questions, you send us your projects, and we take a look at a few of them. Now, we've run in a special consultant.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, special guest that we need for feedback.
Yeah, so you know what? Let's take you to the Sky Desk. We're going to satellite over and ask Greg, our super consultant, to read off the first of the feedback.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Oh, hey, Greg.
All right, well, to start us off, we have Marcelo Henrique Almeida, who wants to know, is there a hard drive limit on the Linksys WRT-1900 AC?
Ooh,
I like
that.
And
this thing's brand new.
Yeah, if you switch to our overhead product camera, this is the hotness. We took a look at this last week. I've been running this through its paces. Oh, my gosh, this is so nice.
Seriously. I've never seen someone get so excited about a router. But if they were going to get excited, this is the
one.
This
would be the one. So this is the 1900 AC right now. It's powered up. Believe it or not, it is powered up. Now, for people who've used other WRT products, maybe that doesn't sound so exciting that it's not super loud. But this is almost like an enterprise or actually an SMB-class router. And it doesn't have a screaming fan. I like that.
No, it's silent.
Right. But we're not talking about the fan. We're talking about these hard drives. He wants to know if he can plug in large hard drives on this thing. Now, this has USB 3, USB 2, and eSATA ports. So you can plug in any of those interfaces.
And what are you using right now?
This is a 2 terabyte eSATA drive.
Cool.
Now, a USB 3 drive. At home, I plugged in a 3 terabyte eSATA drive.
Yeah.
And, go and switch over to my computer. This is one of the things that I really like about the 1900 AC. You know, you don't need. There are some other routers that you can use the storage sharing if you like load a special client, which is whack. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. You should never do that. This does simple Samba sharing. So 192.168.1.1. If I do that, I get right into this. Is all the stuff on that hard drive, which you know it's super super, and not only that, it's crazy fast.
That loaded up quick.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't clocked it yet. I'm still doing that for the benchmarking. But, as far as hard drive capacities on this, I'm pretty sure anything up to 3 terabytes will work just fine.
Cool.
As they add the more popular 4 terabytes, and I believe there's actually a 6 terabyte drive on the way, we'll have to see if the firmware supports that.
Wow. Well, that's cool. Did you do any other tests on it?
I did some load testing. Well, one of the things that I like to do when I get new routers is I have a box. It's what? A special box I got from a company that does stress testing.
I'm just imagining like a black box sitting under your bed or something.
It's not black. It's red. And all the enterprise people out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know what the product is. But what it allows you to do is it allows you to send malformed packets, bad packets, attack packets at a device just to see how it would
react. For testing.
Right.
Cool.
And this is the kind of the thing that kills enterprise-class routers. I mean, if you're going to stress it out, at any given time, I can throw about 40 gigabytes of traffic at someone. No consumer or SMB router has ever survived, like, the second round of tests.
Tell me, Padre.
This is on round 7.
How'd you do?
This is on round 7.
Oh, wow.
So they did something right. It did get really hot, but it's done incredibly well. So
did you hear the fan kick on or anything?
The fan is actually on right now.
It's tiny. Yeah. It's really tiny.
Yeah. But, it's I like this.
It is beefy for a router. I mean, that's a lot bigger than the router I have, but
Burke says it looks mean.
It does look mean. It looks like a spaceship, so. Yeah.
But, Marcelo, there you go. That's your That's your answer. Yes, go ahead and get one of these and plug in your 2 or 3 terabyte drive, either USB or eSATA. You'll be good to go.
Cool. What's up next, Greg?
Well, up next we have Jeff G, who is having some tap confusion. He purchased a Pro Tap, but he's only able to get traffic in one direction.
I actually responded to Jeff G. Now, if you go to my really awesome board that we drew here during the episode where we were talking about tapping. So we talked about the difference between a hub and a switch, right? And when you have a hub, you have one packet in and it goes out. Or one frame
all
in and it goes
through
out.
Through every,
exactly.
All the ports,
so it gets just repeated. Another name for a hub is a repeater. Mm-hmm. On a switch, it goes in through one port. And it looks for the port to which the device it's sent to is attached.
Right.
And it will go out only that port. Well, in the drawing that we made for the actual network, we showed how you could have your cable DSL. Then I wanted you to put a hub here. And then you could have your tapping device then you would go to your switch to PC 1, 2, and 3. The problem that Jeff G is having is that he bought a Pro Tap, which is really cool. It's that little Ninja Star tap.
Oh, yeah. I've seen you use that.
And he's complaining that he can only get traffic in one direction, either going out to the network or out to the internet.
Okay.
Which, unfortunately, is not a defect. That's how that works. The Pro Tap will only give you traffic in one direction. It will not aggregate it. Now, there are things called aggregated taps, but we don't use them much because the problem is if I have, let's say this is a 1 gig connection, right?
All right.
I actually have 2 gigs of data flowing here, 1 gig going that way and 1 gig coming this way. It's bidirectional.
Okay. Yeah. Like two lanes of traffic.
2 lanes of traffic, exactly. If I have a aggregating tap for 1 gig, a 1 gig aggregating tap, that means that at any time both links, both pathways reach 50% of their traffic, I am saturated on the link to my recording device because that's only 1 gig.
Okay, so it's like it can't accept that.
Can't
much.
Accept that. Just start dropping packets. So most taps, at least the inexpensive ones, have been designed only to take traffic in one direction, and then you could have two devices, one monitoring in and one monitoring out.
Okay, so is the problem also Jeff is having is that he, like, somewhere along the line? Is there somewhere? What would be the optimum way for him to do it?
The optimum way for him to do this would be to use a hub, not a tap. Mm. Because, again, I've got some great taps that could do it, but they cost
a lot.
A lot, of, you know, yeah. like $2,000, $3,000, $10,000.
And he probably just wants to keep track of his home network stuff.
Precisely.
So why drop that much money for something?
Get a cheap hub off of eBay, and you can still find them for under $10. Just make sure it's hub and not a switch, because sometimes the vendors aren't honest about what they're selling. You'll be limited to about 100 megabits of data, which should be okay if all you're trying to do is keep track of what's going out to the internet or what's coming in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and then could he get a hub and then test out what he wants to test out and then switch it back to the way it was?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the things. Unless it's one of those really expensive taps, typically you just put it in to troubleshoot.
Right. It's not something you leave for...
You don't leave it there. I mean, I do, but again, I have better...
Well, you're a madman.
I'm mad. All right. Let's
okay.
get... Yeah.
So back to the Skydesk.
This is actually a related question. Greg, what we got?
Vincent Panico wants to know, is someone spying on my computer? He has a Linux laptop, and he's very frightened.
You could tell by the way he typed the question. It was a little
shaky.
Someone's
watching me.
You could feel the fear.
Okay, so first of all, Vincent, calm down, relax. I'm sure that no one's watching you besides Cranky Hippo.
Or everyone's being watched.
But the same thing goes on this drawing. The easiest way to find out whether or not someone is doing something to your computer is to watch your traffic. Because there's all sorts of ways that people can disguise what they're doing on your computer. In fact, we saw this on, if you watched This Week in Enterprise Tech a few weeks back, we had Raphael Mudge. And
that
he
was
showed
a good
us,
show. Yeah.
Yeah, and he showed us how you could use a thing called a pivot to take over a computer. And the person sitting in front of the computer has no idea someone's roaming around his or her computer as him, like with full administrative access. You can't tell from watching the computer, but...
If you watch the traffic, there's
no way to disguise the traffic. If there's traffic going out of the computer, like if you're watching your traffic and you're not doing anything on your computer, and suddenly you notice there's a gigabit of traffic leaving your computer.
What the heck is that?
It's probably something wrong. Yeah. So just put a tap in there. Put a hub in there. Just watch that link. Now it can be a little bit confusing. Wireshark is the program that I'm suggesting to you, which is available on all platforms.
Right.
And it can be difficult to decipher the traffic, but capture a lot of it. And then you can tell over time, oh, wait a minute, what's this address? Why is my computer going to this address? Why is it sending this packet? Why did it send so much data over this amount of
when
time?
When I wasn't doing anything. The thing for me with Wireshark is it's kind of hard to filter through everything that you get from it because you get all that traffic.
It's drinking from a fire. And I think that's the mistake people make is they watch Wireshark for a couple minutes and they see all...
These numbers flying up and down the screen.
What's going on?
Yeah.
No, it's not what you want. I mean, unless you are crazy experienced at deciphering net flows, what you want to do, let it run for an hour, let it run for a day, whatever it's going to be, and then it actually has built-in tools to give you TCP analysis.
And that's what you want to look at.
And that's what you want to look at.
Cool. Right. Thanks, Padre.
No problem. Now, this next question I like.
All right. Go ahead, Greg.
Next question is from Lee Ball. He has money, wants to buy stuff. He has 170 pounds and a 17-inch TFT monitor and a 250-gigabyte SATA hard drive. Should he upgrade the monitor or get a SSD?
170 pounds.
I don't know.
That's like that British money, right?
Yeah. Is that what they're using?
170 pounds is like what, like $1 million?
It must be. I know. Yeah, he should totally upgrade then. Okay. I wish I had that much pounds.
No, so he's looking at $200+. Mm. And actually, this is a good question. Thank you.
Boom. I don't know. Is that the symbol for pounds?
Yes.
Sweet.
It is now. All right. So yeah, this is a question that we get a lot. I have an X amount of money. What should I use on the upgrade? Now, we can't give you an answer for this. We can give you some answers because it depends on what you do. For example, if you were a graphic artist, you'd go monitor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd want a bigger monitor.
17-inch is kind of tiny, actually.
Yeah, it's not a great monitor, but here's the thing. If you're a gamer, I would rather have a faster rig than a bigger monitor.
Yeah, it depends. It's like, okay. And it's also like, if you spend a little bit more, you could get this. Or if you had 180 pounds, you could get an SSD and a monitor or something. But if you want that instant response, you want to see that like really quick upgrade. The SSD is going to make a big difference with loading stuff. Yeah.
See, yeah. This is my go. This is a thing we did a while back for Know How. The exact same computer, exact same operating system. The computer on the left loaded up, since it had an SSD, in 1 minute and 4 seconds. That computer on the right is just going to keep priming. Now, remember, exact same system, same CPU, same amount of memory. It's actually a clone of the operating systems. Identical systems, and that one change. That's just the SSD upgrade of a hard drive is making the difference between loading up in 1 minute and 4 seconds and what's going to turn out to be about 1 minute and 46 seconds.
Yeah.
So you're looking, somewhere in the vicinity of a 70 to 80% speed boost just by replacing your hard drive with an SSD. That's actually the second upgrade that I would suggest. The first upgrade, if you're really looking for speed, would be memory. Now, you didn't say how much memory you had in your system.
Right.
But if you had like 4 gigabytes of memory, upgrading that to 16 or even 8 gigabytes would make a big difference. Now, here's the thing. You don't have to buy a crazy expensive SSD. What I would suggest is you get something. Now, people know that I'm a big fan of the Kingston line. Mm-hmm. Don't buy cheap. This is a really, really inexpensive 830, Samsung 830. And there's also really inexpensive Kingston, the value line. Don't get those because, they do all sorts of things to shave dollars off their prices so they can sell their value line. Mm. The higher end, like the 840 Pro from Samsung or the Kingston KC series, the KC300, you can get decent-sized SSDs, 128 to 256 gigabytes for about $90 to $120. That leaves you a good, $150 to get something else, and be it memory or a slightly bigger monitor.
Yeah.
What do you think? What would your choice be?
I would probably go SSD, just because once you go SSD, it's hard to go back because everything boots up really quick. But if you're doing like any gaming or if you're doing any video editing and stuff, the monitor.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing video editing, okay, I've got it. If you're doing video editing, don't do the SSD because it's small. You're gonna have to pay a lot of money if you want a big SSD. But if you're happy with the monitor and you want your system to snap, get the SSD.
Yeah, if you said you had like a 17-inch CRT, I'd say, okay, go with an LCD.
Yeah.
But if it's a 17-inch LCD, unless it's a horrible 17-inch LCD, I'd take the speed. Especially since, and this is what I like about the SSD upgrade versus, say, the memory upgrade. If you buy a modern SSD, even if your computer can't handle the interface, mm-hmm. like the super fast interface, your next computer will.
That's true. And so you can hang on to it.
You'll hang on to it.
Yeah. Right. And that's another reason to buy one of the nicer ones because don't they have longer read-write?
Yeah, exactly. And again, I know there are people who are going to hark on any brand, Kingston, Samsung, Crucial, because, the drive died after a while. Yeah, if you buy the crappy drives, you're going to get a crappy experience. Yeah. Don't buy the... No one in the know-how community, none of you know-it-alls, should ever be buying a value drive. There, I've said it.
You tell them, Padre.
Okay, good.
Okay, back up to 3,000 feet hovering above the Twit Studios is Gregory Burnett. What's next?
Well, up next is Lenny Craig, and he has a multi-floor setup and wants to know if he can daisy chain his routers.
That's a good question. We get this a lot. People say, well, you know, I got a new router, but I got this old router. I want to use it. It's got wireless.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
So can you?
You can. You can. Yeah. There's only one thing. You got to turn off the DHCP server on one of them.
Right. Use it as like a bridge.
Yeah, really? Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So the DHCP server, that's the Dynamic Host Control Protocol. Mm-hmm. It's what allows any computer that connects to your network to automatically get an address.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Which is good. Yeah. We like that. The problem is if you have more than one DHCP server,
then it's like,
they kind of compete. Like they'll be handing out addresses, and sometimes the device will get this address sometimes. No. Go into the settings and just turn off the DHCP server on one of them, and then you can use the other one as just basically a switch and an access point.
Right.
Yeah, and that's perfectly doable.
Cool. So how many could you do more than two?
I would never suggest daisy chaining more than three ops.
Okay. Huh.
You get weird things after three ops.
Could we daisy chain like three of these? Wouldn't be worth it.
It's like $750 worth of hotness. No. Yo, just get a switch if you're going to do that. What's wrong with you?
Okay, we're crazy, but we're not that crazy.
Not that crazy.
Okay, good to know. What's next, Greggy?
All right. Well, our buddy Vincent is back, and he wants to know if he has a broken screen or a busted laptop. Basically, he has an old Toshiba. The screen went out. He went to Best Buy, and they told him the motherboard went out.
Okay. See, first problem. You went to Best Buy.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Those guys are smart, aren't they?
The Geek Squad. Okay. Well, did he test it out with another monitor? Like, he could have plugged...
So they told him the motherboard was dead, so he went and bought another motherboard, and he plugged it in, it's the exact same thing. Right.
Oh,
now, here, I can almost guarantee that this is the problem. The problem isn't the motherboard, because you said that you were getting some function out of the laptop. The problem is that the backlight of the LCD died. I'm betting it's not even, like, the entire screen. Yeah. Especially on some of those older models, especially the cheaper models, they used really janky CFLs, the cold fluorescents.
Yeah.
And what happens is the inverter for those CFLs die. And when it dies, it leaves the screen in darkness. It looks like the computer's off, but it's actually on. Now, there's a really easy way to tell. What you do is you take your laptop outside and you, like... put it at an angle, try to get the light off of it, and you can still, you would be able to see the image. It won't be perfect, but you'll see it. If you see the image, then you know, yeah, it's just a CFL. Just go ahead and go onto eBay, buy a new inverter, you're good to go.
Okay. Yeah, that's too bad that he already got a motherboard for it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, Best Buy.
All right, what's next, Greg?
Well, Vincent's life is just full of questions because he's up again, and he wants to know, will cryptocurrency mining kill my PC?
There was a suspicion that crypto mining killed one of the PCs here at Twit, but I swear nobody did that. So
interesting. Roll that B-roll. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. So this, you know, you're talking about this, of course. If you're doing crypto mining, you probably have the side off your computer because it does heat it up. If you look at this, the screen for the actual client, it'll tell you how hot the computer is getting. Really, when you're running crypto, that's your only enemy.
Right.
Heat. Allowing heat to build up in your computer is going to cause serious issues, not just for, like, your video card. This is from that computer. See how the heatsink kind of exploded?
All right. To be fair, though, isn't there supposed to be some built-in safety parameters that when, like, this hardware gets to a certain temperature, it shuts down the computer?
Supposed to.
Obviously, doesn't always do that.
But yeah, what I'd say is, yeah, if you're worried about the longevity of your computer, it's just cooling. So go ahead and get. You saw in that little video, I had a small secondary fan that was blowing cooler air into the case. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm no longer doing cryptocurrency mining, I've gone ahead and shut up all my cases, and it's nice and quiet. But heat is really the only thing that's going to stop you from going much Doge, many Bitcoin, so Litecoin. Wow.
Yeah. Heat is the enemy.
Heat's the enemy.
Okay.
All right. From heat to Wi-Fi?
Neighbors are destroying. Oh, sorry.
What Greg. A transition. Yeah. So Capel Kerr, I'm sorry if I totally destroyed your name here, lives in a condo building with 10 floors. Everyone has Wi-Fi, and it's totally killing his. He has an idea, though, to use paint to block his neighbors out.
Okay, this is not a new thing.
Use like lead-based paint or
something?
Well,
it's you want some sort of paint, some sort of material that is conductive. And what will happen is the RF signals will actually hit that conductive surface.
And bounce off?
Well, slightly bounce, but hopefully get absorbed.
Okay.
Right? It can work.
Is it worth it?
I don't think so. I mean, if you look at that link, it'll actually show you the Y-Shield paint. It's expensive stuff. It's $80 a barrel, depending on what kind of size room you're going to need. You might need a couple of these. You will get attenuation. You absolutely will. Is it worth how much money it's going to cost to properly coat your room? Almost never. Almost never. In fact, it's almost cheaper to make yourself a copper mesh and live in a Faraday cage.
What if you did tinfoil? It's just all over the walls and stuff.
Didn't you? Well, see, you didn't grow up when I grew up where tinfoil got you better reception on a TV.
Oh, with like rabbit ears or something?
What I'd say is don't mess with that. You go back to our episode on troubleshooting Wi-Fi, and you can find some of the ways you can determine if there's a clear channel. My advice to you would be, if you are in a very RF-active building, abandon 2.4. Just assume anything on 2.4 is going to be dead. Move to 5 gigahertz. All your devices, all your routers should be 5 gigahertz. You'll be fine. It's a big enough playground where even if you have a few of your neighbors on 5 gigahertz, you should get decent throughput.
Yeah, instead of spending that $80 on paint, you should probably put it towards a router. And then run 5 gigahertz. Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, just so you know, I did check. If you put that lead-based particulate-based paint in an apartment building, you will not get your deposit back. they count that as a contaminant. So
you don't know this by experience, do you? No, of course not.
Yeah. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah, okay.
All right, what do we got next, Greggy?
So next, we have Mark Jurish. He just finished his Raspberry Pi main project, and he wanted to show it off to the know-how community.
Yes. So this was cool. I'm sure a lot of the audience remembers episode a long time ago now, it feels like. I did that main project where you, me, and Ayaz all worked together, and we put it inside of an NES. And it was a really cool project, one of my favorites. So Mark did it, too, after watching our episode. But I am jealous, because this guy did a really good job. These are some pictures off of his blog, but he actually used a 3D printer, which I would have liked to have done, but ours wasn't working. But really, it looks so good.
It's really nice. It's clean.
Not molested at all. Just that one cut in the back of the panel.
I like how he used your tip of taking like the Keystone Jack and just topping it off to the back. It's a good way to go.
Yeah, smart. And then so he took it a step further. What I did is we just used USBs.
Right.
I was just going to keep it simple, use USBs for the controllers. But he actually wired up the original NES stuff to it. But he wasn't finished at that either. He took SNES stuff too, and he wired that up, and he put it in where you slide in the cartridge.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So he can use the original NES controllers. He can also use the original SNES controllers, and he just has to flip up the door there.
You know, we were always figuring something to do with that door.
Yeah,
We
wanted to put, I think one of our ideas was put like a hard drive inside of a cartridge that you put in there, or put it like a drive, like a
something,
CD-ROM drive,
that
you can play movies or something.
And then
but
you have
never
to blow it
anything.
Out every once in a while, like,
right,
to make it work right. Tried a couple of times.
But that's smart.
No, very, very well done. Geeked out. We want to see more of those projects. When you show us your projects, we want to put them on the show just because we're proud. I mean,
yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
you guys grow up so fast.
I know, and especially when they're better than what we did. So thank you, Mark. Thanks for sharing that with everybody.
I feel bad. Two better projects.
We only had a week. Who knows how long Mark had to work on it.
All right.
But, man.
Move on.
Excuses, Brian.
I know.
Well, it looks like Mike Robertson has found a Dogecoin in his backyard.
Oh, wow, man. Yeah, that was on the community. I had to share
it. I saw you choosing that. I'm like, wait, what?
It's more like just a Doge.
Somebody probably sacrificed their computer for that Dogecoin right there. Doge just came out of their computer as their GPU melted, so... Had to give Mike a shout out for the Doge. And then we have an episode idea. Do you want to read it off, Greg?
Sure, Ryan.
What was the next report, Greg?
It's an episode idea for SteamOS by Joseph Ghana.
Yeah, that works for me. Well, I wanted to bring this one up because we get a lot of show ideas. And I want to encourage people to let us know what they're interested in. We might do a show about it, but SteamOS, I want to do a project on that.
Yeah, I was thinking about how we could do this.
We might need to use the budget to build something.
Yeah. So, Tony, we're going to be breaking some budget here. You know what? This is actually a big enough project. If there are enough people in our community who say that they want to see this, we will absolutely build something SteamOS powered. So make sure to join our G+ community, again, at gplus.to/knowhow. Mm-hmm. And tell us, is this a project you want to see? Yeah. Submit ideas, submit future projects, and absolutely show us pictures, videos, whatever, of the projects that you do. We'll feature them right here on Know How. Once a month. We're going to do this once a month.
Yep. As long as Greg's schedule allows for it, because we can't do it without Greg.
Well, I mean, look at that guy. You just trust him. He's got that trusting face. All right. Well, okay, that's the end of the feedback. Now, coming right up, I wanted to show you a little something. You know how last week we talked about heartbeat, right?
Yes,
we gave people that jelly bean explanation.
It finally made sense.
Exactly. And we got a lot of really good comments, both from this and from the know-how explanation. We did basically the same thing. And now that people understand how it works, I thought maybe we should finally show them what it looks like in action.
Yeah, because I'm a visual person, so I think that'll help.
Yeah. No. So we're going to do that, and we're going to bring you some Windows 8 tips when we come back. But first, I thought, hey, you know what? Let's talk about another sponsor of the know-it-alls, of know-how. Specifically about a sponsor who has great service, who allows you to create a clean website, who allows you to choose from templates that they've created that all look beautiful and original, who have almost 99.9999999% uptime, and who handle all the muss and the fuss, all the hassle of running your own website.
So you don't have to get your hands dirty. You can just focus on your content?
Well, I'd say you can get your hands dirty if you want to.
Yeah, that's
true. Otherwise, you just publish and go.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Of course, I'm talking about Squarespace, Brian.
Ooh.
Have you heard about Squarespace?
I have heard of Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy for you to publish what you want to publish. Now, if you have a blog, if you have a website, then you need Squarespace. It's a platform that allows you to worry more about the content that you're creating than the platform that you're publishing it on. That's always a good thing. This is a great way to share a weekend project blog or provide the ability to jumpstart a startup project with a professional-looking site and the ability to quickly and easily take orders and sell creations. No more of those blogs with the coming soon or under construction signs. You know, we want actual content, and that's what Squarespace lets you do. Focus on the thing that's most important, your passion, and everything else you just leave to Squarespace. Now, they are constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. They're also very flexible. For DIYers, this is especially important. There are a set of tools to create your own website without code, from design tools like Layout Engine to the Logo Creator. It's a platform for customization, especially if you know enough code to get under the hood, since the developer platform is super robust. They have beautiful designs. They have over 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. And recently, they added a Logo Creator tool, which is a basic tool for individuals and small businesses with limited resources to create a simple identity for themselves. It's easy to use. Squarespace is always there for you if you need help. They have a live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, there is a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. Squarespace also offers e-commerce, of course. I mean, if you eventually want to monetize your blog or your web page, you're going to want a platform that gives you the ability to enable that. Now, Squarespace has available for all subscription plans the ability to accept donations, which is great for nonprofits, cash wedding registries, and school fund drives. They're also inexpensive. Squarespace starts at just $8 a month, and it includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Squarespace is mobile-ready, which means that if someone brings up your blog, your site on a mobile device, a tablet or a phone, it's not going to look weird. It's not going to be all shrunk down. It will actually refit the content to fit the screen. You get all of that in your basic subscription. Now, even their code is beautiful. As a coder, I like to look behind the scenes. I like to look at the code that's actually generating the page that I see, and Squarespace's code just looks beautiful. Their back end takes so much precedence in where they put their resources that they've made sure that the code side looks as good as the front side. I just like that, to see that in a company. Now, they include their hosting, which means that you don't have to worry about multiple fees, one for the registrar, one for the hosting, maybe one for your developer. It's all contained in your subscription fee, which means one pay, then you play. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Squarespace, free for 2 weeks with no credit card required. Go ahead and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code KNOWHOW to get 10% off and to show your support for KNOWHOW. Now, we thank Squarespace for their support of KNOWHOW. And remember, a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Squarespace.
I love how it just works. Like, you can dig as much as you want into it, or you can not touch anything and just upload your content.
Don't touch it.
So what do we got next,
Parker? Well, you know, we're running long, so I'm thinking maybe we should jump into the Heartbleed explanation. What do you think, Alex? Maybe show the good folks exactly how it works?
The best way to test, and because this is an easy bug to test for, is to actually test it. You know, just actually try to take advantage of it. And let me show you how to do that. First things first, I'm going to just go ahead and drag this module onto the second Linux box there. And it's going to go ahead and fire away and just give it a minute. And it's going to come back and say, scanned one of one hosts. And that's its way of telling me none of those are vulnerable. Sorry, too bad.
Good.
Now, let's go ahead and drag onto 192.168.1.1.3, press launch, and let's see what happens. And we get back that indeed that there was a heartbeat response with a leak. We've got something that's vulnerable. So that tells me that's a server I need to patch. Now, we're going to go in a moment, the implications of this, and we're going to actually take advantage of this bug to get back sensitive data. So we know 192.168.1.1.3 is potentially vulnerable. So let's go ahead and go there with our browser. And earlier, I created a form, okay? This form is on this SSL protected website, https://192.168.1.1.3. And I'm going to do this from another system. I'm gonna log in with the user Padre.
Oh,
and I need a cool password. Padre, what's a good password so you know I'm not making anything up?
Cranky Hippo.
Let's do that. I'm going to just, from my other system here, Cranky Hippo, and I'm going to press submit query. And I just issued a login from my other system that you can't see with Cranky Hippo. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use this SSL test program to connect to that server and try to pull back data with the Heartbleed problem. And I'm going to make my terminal just a little bit smaller here so you can capture the whole thing. And let's just come up here. And all I have to do to run this is just give it the actual server I want to connect to. Again, it has to be my server, not somebody else's.
Right. I don't think we can say that enough.
Because this is so easy to do and the data you could get back could be very sensitive.
It's tempting. I know it's tempting, folks, but don't do it. If you don't own the box, please.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and just run this. And because that particular server is vulnerable to this attack.
That's the memory dump.
It's a memory dump. It's, in this case, 64K worth of data. And what you can see here is whatever was in memory of that particular Apache instance I hit. And it's kind of like going to a slot machine. I don't know what I'm going to get. I just know I'm going to get 64K of data each time. So just keep pulling that lever. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try this a couple of times to see if we get lucky and we get back that Cranky Hippo information. And there we go. The second time's a charm.
Oh, no.
Remember, I hit that web server from a different client, okay? I logged in with Cranky Hippo to HTTPS or SSL-enabled website. And let me know if you can see this up in the Twilight Rye here, but there we go.
Oh, no, we see it.
User Padre.
It's right there.
And the password Cranky Hippo.
It's clear text because it's pulling it straight out of memory.
Yeah, and keep in mind, this is the heartbeat bug in action. Because there's only me hitting that particular web server, there's not a lot of data to potentially get back. I mean, if you had thousands of users hitting that, what I get back each time, it could be anything.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you were pulling the handle on a slot machine that only had one prize. But if this was an actual server in the wild, it would be filled with all sorts of active data, usernames and passwords and encryption keys.
Yeah, and actually, to kind of hammer that home a little bit, I'd like to show you. This is a tweet from Mark Lohman a couple days ago. And what he did is he or somebody. I don't know if it was him, so I don't want to get Mark in trouble here. But he has a screenshot of this attack several days ago being run against one of Yahoo's mail servers and showing how he was able to, same kind of thing, pull back a username and a password for somebody who recently logged in just before that request was issued, okay? So this is a very serious problem. There is potential for somebody to pull back your sensitive data, but when there's a lot of users, it's not really possible to target a user. You just keep pulling that slot machine over and over again and see what you can get.
Yeah, you don't need a specific user if you're getting all the users.
Right. It's pretty scary. And until I set up a lab about 2 hours ago to play with it more, I was convinced that there was a problem. I was just surprised by the reliability of getting sensitive information back. It's pretty scary.
Yeah, the scariest part about that is how easy it is to do that exploit.
Yeah.
I mean, those tools, Metasploit is already online. You can download it for free.
Right.
Now, I will say, I have to say this. Please, 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 please. I know how easy this looks. Do not run this against boxes you don't own.
Right.
If you are an IT person, go ahead and test your own boxes. But if you do run this attack against anyone, like let's say, oh, I want to find out if my Yahoo account is vulnerable.
Yeah, just that's, for fun, right?
Technically, that's illegal.
Yeah.
What you're doing is illegal. So, yeah, I don't want anyone to go to jail.
Well, and it's hopefully been patched in a lot of places, so it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, totally does, by the way.
Oh, right.
I know someone who may have run a scanning test and found like at least 50% of the servers tested still. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, we're going to go into our next segment, which is all about Windows 8.1.
Padre. Wait, we can't do it. There's no time. We ran out of time.
No.
We can't do it.
Man,
well, I mean, he's the TD, man, so
right.
He controls.
So he gets final call, yeah.
I'm a director, Padre.
Well, okay. I mean, now you have it, folks.
We wanted to
bring you the 8.1 hotness. It's going to have to wait another week.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
But you know what? Shouldn't wait another week. You actually got some letters.
That's right. I forgot to mention that. But I got a couple letters a couple weeks ago. You said, hey, send us a letter and we'll send you back swag.
I never lie.
Well, you put me on the hook.
No, wait. I didn't say we would send you back swag.
Oh, right. You said I would.
Thank you.
And then actually on this letter, too, if I go to the product shot, it says, a priest wouldn't lie. Well, you can't see it, but it does say...
There we go.
Dim those lights. A priest wouldn't lie. This is the biggest envelope I could find, and it was a huge envelope.
So did I lie?
You didn't.
I did.
Because you didn't say you would send it. You said I would send it. So did you lie? No, I'm going to.
Okay, it's so can just... you want to show the folks what they get when they send
All
us
right.
envelopes?
So you send us the envelopes. You're going to get this sweet Twit sticker because this is the only one we have at the moment. And the very rare Twit microfiber cloth. These are cool.
Where are those? Because I need one.
There's totally not a giant box of them at the front desk.
Oh, okay,
don't even look.
All right. So, folks, again, remember, send an envelope, a self-addressed stamped envelope to Cranky Hippo. And
I will send it back to you within 4 to 6 months.
Yes.
Cool.
We're good.
Do we have anything left?
No, I think that's it. So next week, we are going to cover those Windows 8.1 tips. So we're going to be giving you a little something-something from a know-how segment that we're starting to introduce. We know there's a lot of gamers out there, so we thought maybe we'd give you some basic gaming tips.
Yeah. Well, you know, with all the testing that we do, we run on these games...
Testing.
We got to do something with those.
Yeah, we have to.
We got great tips of those games that we're testing.
We need to tell Lisa and Leo that we're actually working.
Yes.
This is work, folks. This is hard work.
Well, we have that gaming PC, and we gotta stress it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Acer, by the way, that thing will totally get back to you at some point.
Sooner or later. But we need to use it for the show, honestly. So it's for the fans.
Greater good. It's for the greater good. Now, you know what else is for the fans?
What's that?
Our show notes.
That's right. You can find those at twit.tv/KH. Some of the best show notes I've ever seen. And I've seen very few show notes.
Now, what I like about those show notes is that if we ever run a project that is going too fast, that you think, oh, man, I have no idea what they're talking about, we give you notes. We actually tell you exactly what we're talking about. What we write up on our notes, and you actually get to see step-by-step instructions whenever we do a tutorial. So don't worry about missing something. Go ahead and just enjoy the show. Then jump over to the show notes, and we'll tell you to do exactly what we're doing.
Right?
It's one of the things that we love doing.
All the links. links of things that we mention and stuff. So if you're like, oh, that feedback episode, there's a question that related, but I don't know where it is, well, we'll be on their know-how. Yeah.
Now, do we have an email address?
We do have an email address, but we choose not to acknowledge it.
Yeah, you could write us at knowhow@twit.tv, and we will never answer your questions. No, but you know where you could go.
There's a better way.
Yeah, it's, we have that.
Remember what's yours, Padre?
That G Plus community first.
We got
to talk about. We've been plugging the G Plus community. Go to gplus.to/. Oh, it's twitkh. I was saying knowhow. No, it's twitkh. Go to twitkh. And you'll be able to join the community that is incredibly vibrant. At some point, there'll be a picture there with Cranky Hippo in the background.
Sooner or later.
But those are expensive, folks.
Yeah, no, they don't have that kind of money to pay.
But if you don't like the G Plus vibe, why not also join us on Twitter? You can find us there. Talk to either of us. You can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ.
And I am at I always do the underscore, at @cranky_hippo. Cranky, I wasn't able to get it with just the Cranky Hippo.
Go ahead and follow us, and you'll be able to find out what we're doing each week on the show. And it's a really good way to suggest things to us. And we like to listen to our audience. So if you tell us you really want to see something,
we get it right away.
It's quicker. It gets into our brain. Also, if you want to send us any hate mail about the fact that we promised you Windows 8.1 tips, we're not delivering them.
You can blame Alex Gumpel.
You can blame Alex Gumpel, who's going to turn a camera on himself right now. And you find him at twitter.com/anelf3, A-N-E-L-F-3.
I'm at Big Jerk Face Director.
We're going to make that now. Hashtag Big Jerk TD.
Till then, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
I'm Brian Burdett.
And now that you know,
go do it.